Amy A. from the Rockford area.
Addict named Amy.
Hi, Amy.
I'm here despite myself. As I see people coming in that I know, it makes me remember that I'm going to be okay. I'm nervous, and I don't like doing this, and I don't like people looking at me. So I'm really nervous. I'm sharing it so that it's not just my burden anymore. Now it's your problem, too. This morning, as I was feeling sick and anxious about having to speak, I was reminding myself of how I'm just like a tiny speck in this giant convention, in this giant world, in this giant universe, and I'm like pretty not important. And this is like, while I have my experience and my message, and I hope that somebody gets something out of it, like this is not the end all be all, and there's some relief in that. And it also reminds me of the humility that is so critical in this step. And because I have to speak, as long as I have to speak, I guess I'll tell you a little about myself as well and how I got here and how I've become able to work steps in my life. The unmanageability in my life was clear. I spent a lot of years using and a lot of years trying to get clean. I went through treatment 13 times. Like, it was clear to me that I had a problem, but accepting that it wasn't a particular drug or it wasn't a location or a group of people or any of the thousand things I like to blame it on. It took what it took, and I was finally broken in just the right place enough to take some suggestions and to move into a recovery house that was suggested. And for years, I would say, I can't move into a recovery house. They're in bad neighborhoods where I cop. And I was incapable of making good choices. And finally, leaving rehab without a plan to get high for the first time ever. Was willing to take some suggestions, and I remember asking some real honest questions, like what does it mean to be completely willing and to do whatever it takes to stay clean, and asking some real questions and being willing to empty ashtrays at the meeting. In my neighborhood in Baltimore, where I got clean, there is a clubhouse, like a meeting house above a bar. And you could cop in that neighborhood too. So I had lots of bad choices I could make day to day, but I mean, I thank God that I had the willingness to make the right decision and to go into the meeting instead of any of the other choices I had. And to get a sponsor and to answer the phone when people called and to call other women. And it wasn't long in my recovery, I moved to the Central Maryland area, and I'm grateful that I got plugged into a really great network of women. And I got a sponsor, and I started working steps and learned how to interact with the world, the bigger world. I got job skills by doing service work in NA. I did special events for a long time and had to negotiate contracts with people who are not us and don't know. Like, y'all get it. Like, as nervous as I am because I don't know most of you, like, I'm amongst family, and I know that fundamentally. But it's a whole other ball game when I'm going to job interviews and dealing with people who don't get it. And I don't know why I was blessed with the willingness when I was. I don't know why some people don't. I've watched a lot of people come and go. I've watched a lot of people die in my time here. And I'm not any more deserving than any of those people. I'm really not. And I probably deserve a whole lot worse fate than I'm getting now if we really wanted to look at my actions and behaviors that got me here. And the seventh step is one of my favorite steps. And the first time I worked it was truly transcendent for me. It was, I guess I can't talk about seven without touching on six because that's where the dirty work happens. And I spent a really long time on the sixth step, living in my defects and making some bad choices and watching it like a slow motion train wreck, saying like, don't do that, don't, I did it again. It was like 18 months of that, like head against the wall, like what am I, but slowly gaining awareness of them. I remember I was on the phone with a friend and he asked me what I was doing, and I told a lie. I didn't need to, it was irrelevant, it didn't relate to anything that was going on, but I just said something that was just blatantly not true. And I stopped myself and I said, I'm sorry, Chris, I just lied. That's not true at all. I'm doing X, Y, or Z. And But being willing in that moment to admit that I had just told a lie, I wish it was always that easy. So I slowly started to watch myself not make the same mistakes. And all of a sudden, I had reached this plateau of surrender where it was just like the sky cleared up and I was at the top of the peak and I was like, oh, I had let go of so much. I know everybody works it differently, but it was like I had sort of reached the end of the sixth step when I guess I was finally willing enough to let go and had enough self-awareness and had created enough space between me and my next bad decision that I had some breathing room. And that's the seventh step for me, being in touch enough with knowing that I can't control it. Just like me trying to control my defects is like me trying to control my using. I can't do it. I tried it for a really long time and I can't do it. And so in my sixth step, I'm putting my fingers in everything and I'm trying to manipulate situations and I'm trying to not be that jerk or do that thing, and I can't. And it took a long time to get that powerlessness, that I am powerless over my defects of character. And so I just feel like I had to just hit my head against the wall until I got it. And now, years later, trying to apply the seventh step on a more daily basis, it's a lot harder. There's the complacency of time that happens for me, and the nature of my bad decisions are a lot different now. Like, I liked relationships. They were really a good way of not looking at myself and not feeling my feelings. And there's a line I read a lot of seventh step stuff this week to try to get myself focused. And there's a line that says, while we still experience fear, we no longer have to act on that fear in destructive ways. And that's like, when a relationship goes badly, I don't have to pick up the cigarettes again. Like, I don't have to do that now. I thank God that I've gotten that much freedom in my time clean that I've been able to let go of that one as well. Or when a relationship gets, I don't have to go find a backup relationship. Or just medicate my feelings with, you know, some strange or whatever. I don't have to do that. And those aren't the ways that my defects manifest today, but I'm a mother of two young children. And they work me. And I'm not the most patient and zen person in the world to begin with, so it is really hard for me to have patience and compassion. And I suffer from anger and rage. And the more, this is a part of it too, knowing myself and knowing what exacerbates my defects and my inability to make better decisions. When I am tired, when I'm not taking care of myself, when my bucket is empty, when I am not in touch with my higher power. And my definition, my relationship with the higher power has changed a lot over the years. And thank God for Narcotics Anonymous that I have that freedom to have my higher power as I understand it. And for me, a large part of it is taking the time to meditate and sit with myself and create the silence and the stillness that gives me the spaciousness to make better choices. And when my kids are waking up every 30 minutes all night long for the last month, and at 8 o'clock at night, I don't have it to sit down and meditate. It's like, I know these things are going to make me feel better in the long run, but it's so hard to act on them when my bucket is so empty. And this convention is super well-timed because I'm really grateful for two nights of uninterrupted sleep and nobody opening the bathroom door and nobody asking for, you know, mommy do this, mommy do that. And so I think that's part of the problem too, that since it's not, my defects don't create as consequential repercussions, like the destruction is smaller, it's more localized, it's easier to be complacent or to overlook it or to say, well, I just yelled. It's not like I did X, Y, or Z. But the feelings are the same, and I still judge myself, and I have a really hard time allowing, like, recognizing my limits. Humility, knowing my insignificance and my self-worth at the same time, and being able to balance those two. Like, my experience is valid, and I am worthwhile, but I'm also not, like, you know, better than, lesser than, and that's a really hard place for me, and I came in that way, and I still struggle with that. Just trying to make better decisions a day at a time. I remember when I was stuck in my sixth step the first time. Prior to that, I was always really quick to judge. I'm still judgy, let me just be honest. I judge everything. But I remember judging other people's relationships, or somebody did something untoward in a relationship, and I judged that harshly, like I would never do that. And then when I was working my sixth step and got to experience some of those bad decisions, I was like, oh, that's how this happens. Like, but for the grace of God, there go I. I am not exempt from making any bad decision, no matter how bad it might seem from the outside. When you find yourself in that situation, you have a new perspective. And so I need to keep that in the forefront and have more compassion for myself and for others. And for my children, like my daughter and I, we are the same. She's maybe even worse than me. But we butt heads, and we struggle with the same defects, and she gets so mad, so mad. I get it. And sometimes I will look at her and say, Emmy, you are wasting so much energy being angry right now. Like, you're hurting yourself. And I'm like, oh, who am I talking to? I'm talking to me. But it's so much harder to apply it to myself. But like I'm like witnessing my, and I'm like, wait, but you're five, so what's my excuse? And I thank God for NA, because like I can go to my home group and unload this, and I can speak frankly about the joys and burdens of motherhood, and nobody judges me as a bad mom, because I have some real feelings about my children. And they make me look at myself, and I don't want to do that. and it's, you know, domestic stress. It's such a delightful thing, and it takes its toll on my relationship, and I have all kinds of defects I act out in the relationship with my spouse. And that is the hardest place for me to reel it in, because it's his fault. I'm just kidding. It's easy to... domestic stress just adds a layer of, you know... And he's one of us, so there's that too. But it's nice to know. It's like working the first three steps. It's like I have a bedrock of recovery that enables me to work progressive steps and to work on myself, and I know that I'm fundamentally safe, that I have a place to go, that there's nothing I won't experience that I can't survive clean, because guaranteed somebody else in here has done it. And so my excuses are just excuses. But my husband, it's like, well, you're supposed to take it, right? Like, that's what we do. We're partners. And I mean, no, that's bull. Trying not to cuss, which is a big challenge for me. So being willing to look at myself in the places where it's the easiest to get away with my defects, that's the real work for me today. That's the real work. And running out of words. What's hard too, because the seventh step for me, it's like once I get there, I'm kind of there. I'm in this space of freedom, and there's not a whole lot to say about it except maintaining my daily condition enough to remain there, and that's difficult. But and you know, that's why the tenth step is so good, because it forces me to look at myself every day and ask myself, what did I do today that I wish I hadn't done? And you know, did I act with integrity today? Being willing to look at myself and to stay humble and to not judge as much as I do and as much as I want to. I did not expect to run out of things to say so quickly, but I kind of have. So if you want me to talk about, I can, but if you want to take the floor, you are also most welcome to do that. We should keep talking. You have to keep talking. I will refocus myself. So here, I didn't want to talk about this, and I don't want to cry, so if I do, forgive me. Vulnerability is the lie of self-sufficiency. I am super self-sufficient, and I don't like asking for help, and I can get it done, which is part of the resentments towards my husband, because I'm like, damn it, if you're not going to know that you need to do it, then I'm just going to do it, and I'm going to be bitter about it. And I feel a lot, But I'm kind of shut down, and I put up this front of sarcasm and bitchiness, and like, I'm that guy at work that people are like, oh, she's a bitch, but it's funny because we enjoy our hostile work environment. And there's some truth to that, and humor and sarcasm and my meanness have a place, but I also use them as a mask, you know, to not be vulnerable or admit that I am insecure, that I work in a sort of prestigious place where people are well-educated and well-bred, and they're better than me. They're not. I judge the hell out of these people. And they don't know where I come from, so as far as they're concerned, I'm just like them. And but I feel like this fraud, because I'm like, you know, I shot dope and did this, that, and the other, and, you know, you people, whatever. But it gets in the way, because like, I was forced to take this promotion that I didn't want, but I couldn't turn down, and I don't want more responsibility, and I don't want to direct shit. Like, I want to be behind the scenes, and I want to coast, and I don't want to, you know. That's not what I started talking about a moment ago, but I have a hard time being confident in the workplace, because I feel like I'm not as good as these people, or my ideas are not as valid. And it's really difficult for me to work on that. I have a hard time having a voice, even in a restaurant. Like, if something's wrong, I have a hard time speaking up to, like, send it back. And some of this stems from childhood trauma and blah, blah, blah. But it's like I talk about, so how do I get through this? And the answer is to sort of work on the spiritual opposite. I'm not ready to let go of this defect yet, because that is too scary for me to think about speaking up in these situations that I have a hard time with confrontation. So it's in the workplace, it's in calling utility companies, it's like, unless I get pushed to the point where I snap, and then it's over. And you will hear all about it, plus 10 other things from 2 years ago that had nothing to do with the situation. So I need to find some balance in this area. And last June, my brother died, my only brother. 41 years old, died suddenly of an unexpected heart attack. Like, and I have just been floored by this. Like, this is a grief that I have never felt. My best friend died of an overdose in the rooms. Like, I've had loss, but this is something altogether different. And I struggle with direction on a day-to-day basis. Like, what is the point? I have kids, and I have my job, and I have these things that keep me moving forward. Because I don't have a choice. But it's not done in the same way, and everything's kind of different now, and it sucks. But it's opened up my heart in a new way. There's a vulnerability there that I can't turn away from because it's so big, and I'm trying to use that crack to open myself up in the bigger ways that I have a hard time with. So this is baby steps for me, and this is me making new friends. Like, I'm so comfortable in my little, like, I've been here, I've got my early recovery friends, I have my core group of women, I don't need to make new friends. I don't, you know, like that weird getting to know you phase of a relationship where you're making friends. It's like blind dating, it's uncomfortable. But I've been doing some of that, and maybe I've just found like a few souls that it hasn't been that uncomfortable with, that awkward, like that's a thing in mommy-dom where it's like, oh, because our kids are in a class together, we have to go talk on the playground, and I don't want to talk to you. Oh, and the PTA, like, don't even get me started on that. Like, I want to be a part of the community, and I want to help my kid, but oh, Jesus, like, these women are not like me. I mean, we're all similar in some ways, and we all have the, but it's not like being here with you all, you know? Like, you get it. It's a whole other world. But I'm taking these baby steps with new women. They've been in my home group for years, but suddenly we've just become friends this year. But it's really done good for my heart, you know? It is really helping me. And at the same, it's like, there's like three of you right there are anchors in my life. And I know where I can go. And so when I'm willing to ask for the help and to accept the help, and when I'm willing to stop being self-sufficient long enough to let you in, like, I know where to go. When my brother died, and I'm a little bit of a control freak, and when my brother died, like, I needed help with the kids. And it suddenly didn't matter that you don't have kids, or you don't know what to do with kids, or you don't know how to change a diaper, or that we're not that great of friends. Like, I was willing to accept help and not worry about strings, because I needed the help. And You know, I let my husband figure some stuff out when it comes to taking care of the kids because I needed to be elsewhere. And my son went to school in a bathing suit, and you know what? It didn't matter. We came home one day, and I had left my kids with a friend who doesn't have any kids, and I look back, and I'm like, what was I thinking? My husband got home, and my son was running around buck naked, eating a day-old bagel, and he peed on the floor. It was like, it was mayhem. But in that moment, like, I didn't care. I was like, they're alive, and it was free, and, you know, I didn't have to worry about it. And it sucks that that occurred under really dire circumstances, but it's sort of a glimpse of what happens when I can let go. Like, it's not the end of the world he's wearing a bathing suit to school. It's not the end of the world if he was naked, you know? Like, it's not the end of the world. There are bigger things to worry about, and, you know, sometimes getting that stuff in order is important for me. So I'm using my grief to try to get to know myself better, and I've been doing a lot of work to that end. So, you know, looking for a silver lining, you know, if you can call it that, but there's an opportunity in every situation. And I know we hate, like, another effing growth opportunity. but that's what they are, and I can choose to, negativity is a big defect of mine. I have a really hard time letting go of. And if I'm willing to make a choice to do something different, to let my higher power take control of the situation, to line up people who are available to take my kids so I can be somewhere else. Like, it works out, and nobody got hurt, and nobody died, and nobody, you know. Now, I wish I could apply that better on the day-to-day. I wish I didn't have anxiety every day about this job where I was forced to take this promotion, and nobody's probably looking as hard as I am, but I feel like I'm not good enough. And I am aware that I fell into a skill set, and I'm grateful that I have a skill set. I'm grateful that I'm employable, and I'm grateful that I've been at this job for 12 years. I haven't done anything for 12 years, like, besides staying clean. I've got 15 years clean, and I'm grateful for that. But, like, to be at the same place of employment where you have to deal with people and do a job and not drop the ball, it's a big deal, and I'm grateful for that place. But it's also not my passion. I acquired a skill set, and I feel a little bit trapped. And so the question is, I can be anxious and miserable about it, or I can take some steps to maybe do something different. I have a hard time because I get caught up in the whole, my husband works for himself. My job provides health insurance and benefits that we don't otherwise have. There are some real practical things that I have to think about. I can't just be like, well, bye, I'm going to go do this now. Like, I have little people that I have to provide for. So trying to find a balance between, I'm trying to say yes to the maybe instead of it always being no. I'm trying to make a differentiation between when I'm just saying no because I'm negative and I think I know, like, no, that's not going to happen. No, I know best. Versus maybe I could do that. Maybe not right now, but maybe I can leave a door cracked open that I can find something different. And so that's what I'm working on now as a part of my opening myself and being, see, if I'm not teachable, if I'm not humble, if there's not room for yes or maybe, then I'm going to get what I'm getting, and I'm going to stay stuck in the negativity and the unhappiness, and I have to accept that I have a choice in that matter. And if I want to get out of my way so that my higher power can do something different in my life, or, you know, it's even okay if I say, I don't love this job, but it gives us what we need for our family right now. And it provides in a way that I'm able to take a weekend to go to the convention or go to this women's gathering in Oregon that I'm going to. I'm leaving my children for 9 days with their father. I don't know what's going to happen. I don't think he knows what he signed himself up for. He's kind of like attention deficit, and I keep reminding him. And he's like, wait, you're doing what now? And I'll look at his calendar, and it's on his calendar, but there's no, it hasn't registered. And I don't think until I leave for the airport on June 6th that it's going to register. And once I get out in the mountains of Oregon, I'm not going to have cell phone coverage, so sink or swim, buddy. And I'm going to let go of it, and I'm not going to worry about it. I mean, there was a minute where I needed to make a decision, crap or get off the pot, and, like, book the flights and know that it was happening. And I was like, I don't know. Are they going to be okay? And this is me filling my bucket and letting go of this is me letting my higher power do things instead of me. I got this great opportunity to do this work trade. I'm humbling myself and doing bathroom duty. Like, when I signed up for this thing, I was like, I want the scholarship. I'm willing to work for it. I'm willing to do whatever jobs you need me to do. I wanted to work in the tea house. I wanted to do something a little more glamorous, but I'm in charge of the dishwashing station and the bathrooms. And there was about a week where I was like, I'm not doing that. And then I sat and I created some space and I was like, why not? Like, am I above keeping the bathrooms in order and schlepping water to the dish station? Like, it might not be for everybody, but I think I'm really excited about this opportunity and that I'm stepping out of the way long enough to let something like this into my life. And honestly, before my brother died, I never would have allowed myself to do this. I miss my brother more than anything. But I'm grateful, if there's gratitude in anything, I'm grateful that it has opened enough of my heart to allow me to work towards being authentic for myself. And in turn, I can be better at helping other people, my family, my kids, other people in the rooms, my job. So, okay, I'm done. Thank you very much.